You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast from New York City. I'm Alex Dixon. I was the guest on the last episode, but today I'm the host. My guest is Caroline Martin, who improv fans might know from the weekend team The Curfew, Harold Knight's Mermaids and Co-Workers, Lloyd Knight's Astronomy Club that still improvises once a month, second Monday of every month, show called Let's Talk About Race, Baby.
Yes.
And the indie team King Regis.
Yeah, which I just want to have a shout out to because I loved that team. That was a great indie team. That's all.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's start. So Caroline, when did you start doing improv?
When did it all begin? So I started young.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My drama teacher, she in my elementary school when I was really little, like maybe 8 or 9 or a little bit younger than that, we had a drama club, and little did I know that we were, you know, being dramatic, if you will, but we were mostly doing like short form games, I guess.
Cool.
And it was really fun, and it was really easy for me. I really enjoyed it. And I remember my mom coming to one of the shows, which would just be, like, you know, in, like, a middle, like, a little, like, library and, like, little kids sitting around, and we'd get a word or, like, I don't know, go through one of the exercises, and my mom would just be, like, nervous that today was the day that I wouldn't think of something or, like, whatever. Aww. But, like, it was always fine, and I had this, like, you know, kind of, like, elf gnome character that started to get some traction, you know?
Started to get some fans?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I had a couple requests, like, not understanding that, you know, improv should only happen once. People were like, do that gnome thing again.
Oh, my God, that's so funny.
Yeah, but that was the beginning. And then in high school, you know, musical theater, and we would do some, like, warm-ups or whatever that happened to be improvised, but not a full-on meditation on improv. Uh-huh. And then in college, I was on a very serious Harold team. We were doing, like,
Harold?
We were doing Harolds.
Really? College?
Yeah. We were doing
amazing
Harolds and montages, and, like, you know, we would read the manual, or someone would be in charge of running the rehearsal, and we would be focusing on a very specific thing. That team was called Starla and Sons, and that it's still going at Brown.
Wow.
And we were the second version of that team, but that was a pretty serious college improv team. We went to Skidmore and did that whole kind of college scene.
Yep.
And then came to New York and just started taking classes at UCB.
So did you start taking classes right after you graduated?
Immediately.
Did you move to New York to do that, or you got a job in New York and then were like, oh, cool, I can take improv classes too?
Well, I grew up in Hoboken, New Jersey. Uh-huh. So in high school, I used to come and just see UCB shows a bunch.
Oh, wow.
So for me, I was just coming home, and my first job out of college was this year-long internship at Juilliard in their opera department. And so the goal and the job was that I was going to be in art administration, and I signed up for improv just to, like, have some joy. And then slowly that took over most of my life. It just started to go really well, and got into astronomy club, and it just kind of snowballed after that. But I was just coming home from college and got that job. And that job was so stressful that improv was so much more fun.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You mentioned Astronomy Club. Let's talk about Astronomy Club. Because you guys were an indie team mm-hmm. that auditioned for Lloyd Knight together and got put on Lloyd Knight together.
Yeah.
Which is very cool. And I may be wrong, but I believe you're the only indie team to have ever done that. Is that true?
I think we're the second one.
Okay.
Second one. I don't really know where that number came from, but people have been saying that, so I'm just going to trust that.
Okay.
But if that's inaccurate, please don't come at me.
Okay, we'll say it's very rare that that happens.
Sure,
and it happened to you.
Yeah, and I don't think they allow teams to audition anymore together, I think. But yeah, we started rehearsing together when I was over at the Pit doing a lot of like indie shows over mm-hmm. there. Someone on Astronomy Club, maybe James or James III or, you know, someone else scouted me, if you will, and was like, Caroline, join.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started rehearsing with those guys, and we would do a rehearsal once a week for like 3 hours and just run through Harold's. And
did you have a coach, or you just were playing with each other?
Yeah, we had Chelsea Clark for a couple of months, if not the majority of the time. And then we had our audition, and our goal was, you know, with us working together, maybe like one or two of us will get a call back because we all know each other. And it just went so well. We all got put on, which was really like we never thought that was going to happen.
It's so exciting.
You know? So that was really, really exciting. It was also really cool to be on the team with Keisha because when I came to New York, also, if you don't know this, I'm a black woman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if people know that by just voices and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
And they shouldn't because that's called stereotyping. But anyway.
Shame on you if you assumed.
Yeah. And so I bring that up only because when I was at Brown, I was the only woman of color doing improv. And we went to Skidmore on college teams. I like every once in a while would see like a black man and would be like, hi. And we would like rush to each other. And it was so exciting. So when I came to New York and I started taking classes, there was this team doppelganger with three black women,
mm-hmm.
Sashir, Nicole Byer, and Keisha Zoller. And I would watch them just like destroy Cage Match this one summer. Or I don't remember the time frame, but it was like many weeks back to back. And I went every week. And
not only a team of women, but a team of women of color.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
It was absurd. The first time I saw them, I started crying. So then fast forward to Astronomy Club, where once I found out that Keisha was on the team, I was like, I'm like, I honestly didn't talk to her for like 3 weeks.
You were so intimidated.
I was just like, we do a show together.
Right. Now you're such good friends.
Yeah.
That's
isn't that
awesome.
Crazy how the world is?
That's so cool.
Yeah. So.
She made you cry. You were so inspired. And now you're friends with her.
Yeah. it really is. It's insane. We have our sketch show, Obama Daughters. I play Malia
funny.
Obama and mm-hmm. Keisha plays Sasha.
And James III, who you mentioned, plays Obama.
Yeah. Yep. And Monique Moses is, who's also on Astronomy Club, mm-hmm. Plays our Michelle. So
cool.
it's a fun Astronomy Club family.
When you were doing indie stuff with Astronomy Club, were you guys running Harold's? Were you rehearsing doing Harold's?
We were, just because it was, I thought, you know, more so a practice group.
Mm-hmm.
We were very focused on Lloyd auditions, and mm-hmm. we did do some indie shows from time to time, but it wasn't until we were officially a team that we started, you know, getting requests for us to do shows, and we did montages, but we were focused on Harold's.
So talk to me about when you guys were on Lloyd Knight, what felt different for you improv-wise, if
mm-hmm.
anything,
mm-hmm.
being on Lloyd Knight with this team that you had already been improvising with versus improvising maybe even in indie shows?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So, I mean, with Astronomy Club, what I love was that we're all friends, and we just got to perform on an amazing stage with an amazing crowd. But it was fun that we could do race-facing material since we're all people of color, and
mm-hmm.
we built a lot of trust with that. But there were moments where we would debate, like, are we doing too much race stuff? It's part mm-hmm. of our identity. And so all those conversations were really formative and who I am as an improviser, because I would say on teams where I am maybe one person of color,
mm-hmm.
like, I just don't really indulge my cultural side, not because I'm, like, you know, negating myself, but just because I'm like, I don't need to do that, but I'll play a witch or something. But like, I'm not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But with Astronomy Club, especially with our show, Let's Talk About Race, Baby, where we interview someone about a moment where race has affected them. Uh-huh. I mean, obviously, race will come up a bunch, and that feels really great considering we're people of color who deal with race every day. So that was a very unique situation.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk to other folks who have been on Lloyd in a situation where you're just on a curated team with people that maybe you've never met before and you don't know, that obviously can blossom into a really good friendship or partnership, but sometimes it doesn't. And that's kind of a bummer when you've been working so hard to get on a Lloyd team.
Right, yeah. So you guys were on Lloyd for a year?
We were on Lloyd for a year, and then we got broken up.
And then you got moved to Co-Workers on Herald Night?
I did, yeah.
And how was that?
It was good.
How did that feel at first?
Very intimidating. Especially with Patrick Knoth. I just, like, had watched him perform for so long that I was like, I'm on a team with this guy? So that was kind
of
weird.
That's a theme of your improv life.
Yeah.
I'm on a team with this person?
Yeah. And he was so nice and so cool, and everyone was. Zach Phillips, like, there are just some monsters on that team. So for, like, the first, I don't know, like, maybe 2 months, I was really hesitant in my head and second-guessing a lot of the choices that I was making as an improviser. And it took a while to, like, come over that hill of self-doubt.
So in terms of the Herald, we're going to talk real nerdy improv stuff now.
Okay.
So in terms of the Herald, do you feel like you were on Mermaids and Co-Workers?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously not at the same time.
Yes.
Do you feel like there was an aspect of the Herald that you felt like you learned the most on one team versus the other? And what were those things that you were like, ah, this thing just clicked? Because the Herald is very hard.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a long time to feel comfortable with it. I feel like it's never perfect. But
yeah.
So what were some kind of learning moments in terms of the Herald?
Great. I mean, with Co-Workers, I think because I was a little stressed and I wanted to do the best job I could do, I felt like I became a really good technical second and third beat analogous person where I would just feel steam coming out of my ears because I was like, you need to get the best idea and you can just do it right now. Like, I was just so aggressive with my mind, and that actually was great.
And meaning then, as like the initiator of those ideas?
Yeah.
That's great, yeah.
And I find now that it's a lot easier for me, but I think because I was so like, not only do I want the audience to enjoy this show, but like, I want to earn my spot. I want my team to feel like I'm a contributor.
Right.
That they like that I'm here, that I deserve to be here. So I was really in my head because I was expecting to do, you know, Lloyd multiple years like some of my other improv brethren and sisterin. Do you say that? Sisterin?
Sure. We can now.
So, yeah. But then for Mermaids, Mermaids is an insane team. It's insane. And I think, you know, I wasn't nervous to be on that team. I felt empowered there and happy, but like, legitimately, anything can happen.
Uh-huh.
And even after being on that team for a year where I really felt like I know everyone, I still would go on stage and be like, I don't know what Morgan Miller's going to do.
I was on Detroit with Morgan. I know.
No idea. Mm-hmm. Betsy as well. And not in a bad way.
Yeah,
in a really
she's so funny.
Empowering way, because for me, I was truly improvising. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Completely in the moment. And the other thing that I thought Mermaids, I mean, excels at right now and when I was on that team, group games. Mm. Just like monster group games where we would all just follow this idea to such an absurd height that it would be so simple. Like, there's this one idea, let's just blow it out and keep following that.
Yeah.
And I feel like in class or as a student, if you don't have that trust and that energy and that aggression, you never kind of see that moment where it does start to like just fly.
Yeah.
And on Mermaids, it would just fly where we're picking people up and we're like spitting. You know, I don't know. That's a bad example. But like, it would just get insane.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, we would get backstage and we would get our notes and the notes would be really awesome. But like, regardless of the notes, we would just be like, what did we just do? And it was so much fun.
Had, like, that improv high.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun.
That's awesome that your two Herald teams, like, one made you a technically better improviser and the other one let you kind of, like, take the training wheels off and go nuts.
They helped me just, you know, not be, not just, I don't know, just enjoy it.
Yeah, that's
and
cool.
And not be all technical city, if you will. Mm-hmm. It was just so much fun. And I also just love the voices. A lot of their, like, okay, like all that stuff. I love it. And that's totally me stealing that from either Betsy or Morgan, but they're very funny. Thank you so much.
So what would, you're also a teacher at UCB.
I
so
am.
This is probably
mm-hmm.
putting on your teacher hat,
okay.
but it doesn't have to be.
All right.
What is your, I guess it sounds like it can be different depending on the team, but what is your approach now? You're on the curfew.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are not doing heralds because once you get to the weekend, you don't have to. So you
baby.
Don't.
How
do you think doing the herald, and would love it if you'd be specific about a certain part of the herald, first mm-hmm. beat, second beats, whatever, helps you improvise for an hour on the curfew?
What part of the herald helps me improvise for an hour?
Or what did you learn on the herald that you're like, oh, that's, I wouldn't have been able to do this maybe even as confidently if I hadn't had to, like, do the herald for so long.
Got it. I think that the opening, whatever opening that I was doing on that team, helped me categorize data from the, you know, interviews that we're doing with the audience, as well as mine them for comedic ideas, and also figure out, how am I going to play this? And what's fun on the weekend is that, you know, it's not in the Herald structure, so it's not going to be like a maybe 4.5 minute first beat,
mm-hmm.
but I can at least start a scene with the same aggressive attack that I'm assuming that I only have 4 minutes to do it or what have
you.
Oh,
that's cool, yeah.
So I think that that really helped. And then the other thing would be maybe the third beats, just the idea of holding on to an idea from the beginning of the show.
Mm-hmm.
If we were doing a run or something like that at the end of the third beats, but even just memorization to help you when you're wrapping up callbacks from mm-hmm. the beginning of the show to the end, you know, from 40 minutes prior. So I think that has really helped me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I remember being on Lloyd Night and, like, the pattern game would end and I would just be like, it's gone.
Yeah,
I have
right.
no idea.
It is such an additional skill to mm-hmm. remember ideas from any opening.
Yeah. Totally.
Especially on Lloyd Night or Herald Night when mm-hmm. the adrenaline is flowing.
Yep. Yeah, totally. So that was the one big awesome takeaway from Herald Night, just being able to memorize and categorize comedic data.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm, like, really nerding it up, but that's how I talk about it in my class.
I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. What part of the Herald was the hardest for you throughout Lloyd Night that you always got maybe a little nervous about?
It's so weird that at different stages, different things were difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So pattern game has never been my best friend.
Okay.
Not a huge fan.
Okay.
I'll say it.
Talk about what you don't like about it. And then as a teacher, what you try to highlight as the thing that's useful about it.
Sure. So the thing that is difficult outside of mining for comedic ideas, which I think that's a really valuable skill, and it makes... I think it kind of uses that muscle that if you're in a writer's room or, like, whatever, like, that is a great skill to have. But I think the forced kind of veneer you put on it of, like, we're having fun, we're friends having a conversation, that's nonsensical. But, like, doing it with Astronomy Club, people that I was friends with, and getting to a conversational tone for it where we really were bouncing off of each other's ideas. It was really fun.
Yeah.
And I think to the audience, it hid that structure enough that they would be like, oh, cool, maybe that was a living room, or maybe they were just having a little chat. But we also used to just employ literally saying, that makes me think of, versus just the word.
Uh-huh.
So, like, forcing yourself to reserve the right to speak. I'm choosing to speak by saying, that makes me think of, and then by the time that I get to that moment, I'll just poop it out to truly be in the moment.
Oh, that's cool. So meaning, like, it eliminates that thing that happens a lot in the pattern game where people are saying words at the same time. Or if you're feeling a little gun shy, it's giving yourself space to be like, I'm speaking now, and we'll see what happens at the end of the sentence.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Cool. I love that.
And then the other thing is just energy and looking up and having fun and being down to laugh and, you know, being in kind of a stressful situation. But, yeah, you know, I think most of the time I'm just teaching how to smile and have fun and hide how hard this is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Oh, sorry, I interrupted you because I wanted to talk. Oh, we were talking about what was hard for you about Harold's at different stages.
Oh, yeah. And so...
So pattern game was Lloyd Knight.
Lloyd Knight was the pattern game, baby. But the rest of it, I was like totally fearless. First beats, not a problem. Group games, we got it. Second beats, third beats, I love. And then I get to Harold Knight. And I think it was just... my confidence for a little while where, like, I wasn't always out for the first beats. I would observe for a while, which was unusual for me because on Lloyd Knight I would usually be in, like, the first scene or second or third. But I was having a hard time just making sure that I summarized the game in the same way as the other performers. You know, that team, coworkers, had a lot of fabulous analytical writer players that could really boil down a game into like multiple facets to it that I hadn't always done. So after observing for a couple months, I was like, oh, okay, so if we hold on to this context with this unusual behavior, but then there's this sub game, like trying to find all the other details that I would watch, you know, Zach Phillips, for example, play. Like he just is one really great at memorization, but also just like the details in his scene always got me laughing, but it was really impressive. And on the back line, you're like, wow, I wouldn't have remembered all that.
Yeah.
So that was really difficult. And then on Merms, you know, out of nowhere, third beats. Third beats just like totally.
Do you think it's because the show was just such chaos in a good way that it was like third beats was like, how do we tie all that together?
Yeah. And, you know, it would just be one of those things where, like, the second beats and the group games, Mermaids was a team that would always just, like, you know, shoot for the stars in every single scene. So you don't want to heighten in a way where all of our third beats are like, we're at the gates of heaven. Hitler's here or, like, whatever.
Right.
So trying to just, like, you know, in a sophisticated way, find yet another way to isolate that comedic idea and find a new way of playing. For me on that team, I found that I wouldn't always focus on heightening kind of the stakes of the scene. Mm-hmm. I would just heighten how that character emotionally is reacting,
okay,
if that makes sense.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So for me, that helped my brain kind of relax a little bit. But I don't know. I think it's kind of similar to like being a little kid and learning an instrument and you just go for it. So on Lloyd Knight, I was just going for it. And then as I got more mature in my improv, started to question a lot of stuff, which I've grown from it, but I also am annoyed that I got into my head.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but I also feel like a lot of that is like you kind of had to do that to then be, because it's like, would you have been where you are if you hadn't done that?
That's
Who
true.
Knows?
But, you know, it's not done. On the curfew, I'm back to being a little hesitant.
Oh, yeah?
You know? I'm the new gal on the block.
Yeah.
And, you know, that team is full of people who literally are mentors.
Right.
Yeah. And so I observe them a lot. It's kind of like coworkers part two, or I'm observing them and, you know, not being too aggressive yet because I just want to slowly ease my way into the team. So right now, like, I'm a quieter player. That's all.
Do you feel like when you're observing because you're learning where you fit into the team, or you're observing almost like you're taking an improv class, you're observing how they improvise, or is that the same thing?
I think it's a combo platter. You know, sometimes I genuinely am just watching like the audience and just giggling along, and then I'm like, oh, wait, I gotta get in there. So that's difficult. But at the same time, Yeah, trying to figure out what my role on the team is. On different teams, I've had different roles.
And, yeah.
So yeah, it's just been a nice period to figure out how I fit. But mm-hmm. also, it is a little bit weird to be on a team with them. It's great.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
But it is weird.
It's surreal.
Because I do look up to all of them. So
yeah.
Sometimes I feel like a student and I'm just like talking to them backstage and I'm like, yeah, cool guys. Hey. I don't know. I just
feel like
I'm
pretending a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, like just a big old weirdo. But I'm doing my best.
Well, I mean, when I've seen you at the curfew, you're awesome. So I
oh,
don't
thanks,
know what that does, but get in there, girl.
I'm trying.
There's also a lot of people on that team, so it's probably hard to sometimes. Yeah, that's a lot of people if they're all
yeah.
there.
If they're all there, yeah.
So I want you, we've kind of been talking about getting in your head or being confident getting in there and then finding those sort of valleys where you're not as confident.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about a time when you were on a house team at UCB, so any of them, where you felt like, oh, I just failed and you were on stage?
Hmm.
And a time where you, in the moment, were like, oh, my God, I just nailed it.
A time where I failed, I remember where I think it was coworkers, and not to get into like the details, but like we were getting heckled by someone.
Oh, that's when
that?
I was your coach. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was
so
terrible.
So it was like a drunk person in the crowd.
Uh-huh.
And it was so weird because I stepped out to initiate. And I could hear a woman's voice, like, yelling. And so I was looking around, and I saw Sarah, and she was on the back line. And I was like, well, where's Molly? Maybe she's running in the house and doing something. And I saw both of them just standing there on the back line.
I remember watching from the tech booth thinking it was Molly Gaby.
Yeah. And I was like, what's going on? And then I spotted her, the person who was just yelling, and I genuinely froze. I was like, do I address this? Do I not say anything? And so I just froze for probably 2 seconds. But
uh-huh.
in my mind, it was very long.
Yeah.
And it was such a great moment because everyone came off the back line. I especially remember Ray Cordova, who's the love of my life. I love him. He comes charging off the back line and just goes.
Because she also walked onto the stage.
I think he grabbed her with Curtis and pulled her on stage. And they're like, you want this? You're going to come on stage and do this scene
oh,
or whatever.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But like, I felt so protected by them. That was so cool that they were just like. And then I think for the rest of the show, Ray sat on the stage on a chair just being a heckler. So, like, we incorporated it into the rest of the show.
Yeah, and she had been removed from the theater at that
yes.
point.
And so she was gone. But, like, yeah, I was so thrown off. I was
yeah.
just like, ah! And that was such a good show. I remember it was, like, a well-oiled machine. We were moving so fast. Our first
yeah, and the audience
were great.
Was so on your side,
I
too.
I know. But anyway, that was terrible.
That's great, though, to have a moment of what you in that moment were like, oh, no, I'm failing. And then to have
mm-hmm.
truly your teammates have your back and be
yeah.
like, nope, we're doing this.
Yeah, we'll figure this
That's
out.
That's like what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. And that felt really, really great. And a really successful moment doing improv. I don't know.
It's harder to answer when you're a kind person like you are.
Oh.
You're like, I don't want to talk about myself in a flattering way.
But I
it can be like a like you came off stage and it was like, oh God, I was just a part of that and my team just killed. If it feel because I know with improv, it's like it doesn't ever feel like it's just you.
Yeah, I feel like let's talk about race, maybe. I am really proud of. Kind of the social aspect of that show of
mm-hmm.
there needing to be a dialogue on race in this country, and we've found kind of a cathartic and fun way to do it. And unfortunately, there have been so many terrible news pieces
mm-hmm.
as far as race that have been so sad recently that after some kind of atrocity,
mm-hmm.
our crowd will swell and it'll get real big of a
wow.
lot of people just being like, oh, I need to face this issue and talk about it and be around other like-minded people, what
mm-hmm.
have you. And those nights, although sad and shrouded in politics and being annoyed, it is really great to do improv that feels like it's not just like, we are taking complex, difficult issues where, since we're a diverse group of black people who are all different in socioeconomic, cultural, immigration status, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it is really fun and difficult. And I don't know. It's something that feeds my soul in addition to just doing improv.
Like, you get to have the joy of improv, but also be like, I just did something that's important.
Yeah. And it feels really great. And you can see the people in the audience just kind of totally on the same page, just nodding along with like, oh, this. One of my favorite things is whenever a woman stands up and she's like, we say, like, we ask for your name and then if you want to self-identify, whatever. And so we've had a couple women stand up and they're like, oh, I'm mixed race. And I'm always like, yes, me too. And a lot of our stories are similar. So that brings me a lot of joy.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Do you, so I was interested in, like, the longer one does improv and gets to know herself, the more it feels like you can bring your own voice to the stage and really have those moments of like, oh, I got to laugh for that, but that is just how I feel in real life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you feel like when you perform with Astronomy Club, it obviously scratches the improv itch and then another itch for you, but does it feel like you're able to have your full voice on stage, or is it just a part of your voice that maybe you just don't explore with other teams? Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I think it's just a part of my voice that I don't usually actively use in improv.
Mm-hmm.
And not because I've ever been on a team that's been like, don't use that voice. Ew.
Right.
Like, it's just,
you are making us uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always been on teams with people I trust and love. And there have been moments on stage where I'm just like, oh, you know, this is going to be a great slavery second beat. And I'll go for it.
Uh-huh.
And I remember this one time I initiated something to that end, and I can just see the fear in Matt Starr's eyes, and I was like, we totally did and executed exactly what I wanted. But I think it takes a team where you really trust each other, and I trusted him to totally be fine with that content, and he was. But yeah, sometimes things happen that you know, maybe the word or the opening on a team that's not Astronomy Club does kind of like, I don't know, bring out an idea that I feel like is a part of that part of myself that I'm like, I'll go on to the next idea because I don't want to make anyone uncomfortable on stage. Or
does that feel bad at all to do that?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. And maybe that speaks to a large problem in my psyche, but it doesn't.
I also
really
imagine it's something you've done your whole life, right? It's like, well, I won't get into that
because
no one else maybe wants to talk about that,
whether
that was true or not. Who
knows?
Yeah.
And I don't, and it's funny because I think that's just a choice that I made, but it's really nice to have that outlet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
That's cool. Is there anything about the Herald? Because the Herald, in my opinion, I think most people's opinion, is the hardest long form structure, right?
It's a beast.
It is a beast. Is there anything about it that in retrospect you're like, oh, that's super fun, but I like was too in my head about it to think it was fun, or anything like that feels like now that you're able to do whatever you want basically on the curfew, that you have a newfound appreciation for something you learned or got to do in the Herald?
Group games are such a magical, luxurious treat. They're so great. I love them.
Yeah.
And I like, the philosophy behind our group games, as we teach them here at UCB. I love those. And I used to really get into my head as far as, like, you know, should we have someone who has a counter argument? Should we, you know, and I really was thinking about all of these players in this scene as a little bit of like a chess tournament. Would you say that? A chess match?
Yeah.
A chess, you know, just overthinking it. And then being on a Mermaids where it was just really dumb, silly patterns, and then we'll just continue that and don't overthink it. So yeah, it was it's so funny that once you do it enough, it just unlocks itself and you're like, oh yeah, this is real dumb.
Right. Yeah, this is dumb.
This is real dumb.
Just adults
real
being
fun.
Dumb.
Yep. It's fine.
So you miss like the aspect, or you appreciate in a different way the aspect of like the group game where it lives in the Herald?
Yeah.
Because obviously you're still doing group games, but it feels different than the group game slot of the Herald.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. On Lloyd Night, or, you know, or like just watching the energy die in them. And I'm like, why does that happen? And then after a while, you're just kind of like, are we all... Everyone in this office needs to pee, and we're just going to heighten how we defecate on each other. Great.
Yeah.
That's, you don't need to really like outline that or really think that through. So I don't know. I think it just clicks.
It sounds like from talking to you that you are a pretty cerebral improviser. I know you're a very smart person. Do you think that like group games, especially on Mermaids, were appealing because you couldn't overthink it? You just had to be dumb and do it?
Yeah. Well, you know, I love improv because I am a very, I would say that I'm a quieter person and seem to, unless you're my friend, but like normally I think I'm pretty quiet. I second, third, fourth guess things. So when I'm improvising, I do kind of feel like the best version of myself, where I'm just moving fast and I'm not, you know, getting hung up on any of the choices that I presented in my mind. So once I got comfortable improvising at that speed, that like terrible second guessing little voice snuck back in. And so it took a while to suppress that again and just to like be in the moment and really enjoy them. But still, even, you know, on coworkers or on astronomy club, when we were doing Heralds together, I would still be, I think to my detriment, like graphing it out in my mind, creating like, you know, a presentation on like, well, if, you know, 75% of this was good, but you know what? I think that that wasn't quite on, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, I just became a little bit of a nitpicky player in my mind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when I started coaching, I was super nitpicky, and then I was just kind of like, relax. And Mermaids helped me chill out, which was really
That's
nice.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, if that makes sense.
Yeah. What's something, because you teach, what's something when you teach at UCB that you push a lot that you wish somebody had said to you as much as you say it to your students?
So when I see it, like if I can sense that someone's receding into their mind and they are having less fun, and especially in 201, I use this patented phrase.
Here
I say,
go.
Poop it out. Just poop it out. And hopefully it makes them laugh and also realize how dumb this is. We're strangers in a room making things up. but I just try to, I don't know, hold on to it being really joyful. I feel like sometimes if you're an improviser who's been doing this for a really long time, you get to this like level of like professionalism and start to get like dogmatic and kind of cruel with your notes and how you go about teaching it. And I mean, you gotta remember improv should always be fun.
Right.
It's so silly. We should be laughing. So I try to just say poop it out as much as I can.
You also meow a lot.
I meow a lot. Oh my gosh. I have weird tics as a teacher. If I'm thinking and I'm teaching, I go meow, 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 meow. and I don't know why I do that. I don't like cats.
I mean, it keeps it light.
It keeps it light. We try to have fun. Yeah, but that's my big thing. Relax.
So, I was going to say, you wish that somebody had said poop it out to you more.
Yeah. Poop it out. Cause for me, I was just on the back line doing, you know, like a crossword puzzle.
Yeah.
How do I put this all together? But I enjoy it. I love puzzles. That's fun for me, but I don't really think that that was the point.
There's a time and a place for puzzles.
Yes. Yes. Totally.
That's cool. I love that you said that when you improvise, it feels like the best version of yourself, because sometimes I feel like that. And in a way that doesn't feel disparaging about who I am mm-hmm. off stage. It just feels like, oh, that was me, like, clearly or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, distilled.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally, yeah. Because, yeah, I'm the kind of person that will, like, you'll just see me, like, awkwardly, like, pacing by a bathroom, unsure if I should go to the bathroom, but, like, you know, just kind of awkward.
Right.
But on stage,
and
there's that
you
confidence.
Just poop it out.
You just poop it out. You got it. A lot of poop work in my improv.
That's good.
Thank you.
That's a good segue. I was going to ask you, now that you've been doing it enough, you probably are at this point now where, maybe even without thinking about it, in a scene that feels stuck or not working for whatever reason, you can kind of quickly self-diagnose. And
mm-hmm.
what do you think for you most often is the thing that you go, here's what needs to happen right now, this scene is stuck, whether you're conscious of it in
yes.
the moment or not?
My favorite note is the scene is not about X. It's not about the bake sale that mm-hmm. we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
How does this make your character feel? What's going on in your backstory? Because sometimes I feel like you can dig yourself into a corner with mm-hmm. a lot of, like, well, the unusual behavior is this, and this is the game, mm-hmm. and, like, who cares? How does your character feel?
Mm-hmm.
And you will heighten if you actually have stakes in what's happening in the scene, and if you really care about this person being unusual to you that have a backstory with. So, like, if you really care, mm-hmm. I feel like that has unlocked a lot of stuff and made it easier.
So if you're in a scene,
mm-hmm.
you're at a bake sale,
yes.
and you're like, oh, this scene isn't going anywhere, you might quickly say to yourself, like, oh, I don't have to talk about the bake sale.
Yeah.
And then you just talk about what happened to your character last week, or
yeah, I'm leaving my husband. But it's like,
yeah, this bake sale has very high stakes for me.
Yeah, because I highly doubt the audience is like, I want to see all the cookies sold.
Yeah.
Like,
tell me what different baked goods are on the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's one of my favorite notes is that, you know, the scene's not about X.
Yeah, that's so fun, too, because if you do go, I don't have to talk about the bake sale, it probably is going to somehow come back to the bake sale, which is so satisfying.
Yeah.
It's like you just said, I left my husband. That somehow is connected to this person needing to be at the bake sale,
mm-hmm.
and you'll figure that out.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Totally.
So how often now do you feel like you're in scenes where you're like, oh, I didn't decide how I felt about this? Does that ever happen still?
Sometimes mm-hmm. for sure, but I really, my characters improvise from a selfish place of, like, how they feel about things.
Mm-hmm.
and not in a scene-stealing way, just
yeah.
in a I'm really reacting to my scene partner way. And yeah, that makes me really happy in the scenes, because then, you know, you lock down your base reality, but so what, who cares? No one cares about that. What's going on with your with your character? So that always helps me a bunch
uh-huh.
in scenes. Yeah, I don't know. I also really like this sounds like so as if I'm like, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. This just sounds like fancy, and I don't mean for it to sound
okay.
fancy. I really believe it. I was watching, I've been watching a lot of Gravid Water recently.
Yep.
And I really am interested in, like, the amount of silence that can be used.
Yeah.
You know? And
I love,
like,
silence on
especially,
stage.
Yeah. And especially with the scripted characters and how they'll sit in silence for a moment. And then sometimes the line is like, so if they were talking about A and then there's a nice silent pause and that character in their mind is going through a lot, they'll come back and kind of be at, like, D, referencing something from the past or, like, and so I just am really interested in that. I think that's really cool, because sometimes you can just be moving at 100 miles an hour
mm-hmm.
when you're improvising, that I just really like kind of slower paced,
uh-huh.
real scenes. And that's coming from a woman who plays a unicorn a lot of the time. But, you know,
a fast-talking unicorn.
A unicorn is also a police officer. Like, I'm doing my best. But, like, I am interested in that as well. And I think that that might be what I want to work on in the near future.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
So, Caroline, what is your advice for... Ooh, let's do this. Ready?
Ooh, okay, yeah.
You get to meet Caroline Martin, who's in, just got into advanced study. So she's done with the core classes. She's maybe taken her first ASH.
Okay.
You get to go back and talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
What's your advice for her, improv or UCB or performance-wise? Or what do you say to her? Maybe it's not advice. What do you say to her?
I would say relax, have more fun. Never leave a rehearsal, like, annoyed. Almost like never go to bed with your spouse in a fight.
Yeah.
There's really no reason to be like, oh, gosh, just not getting in on those group games in the way that I want. And like going to bed and like stewing.
Uh-huh.
So just trying to have more fun. Also, I think that being in this community for so long that like on the indie circuit, there would be people that I would just be like, oh, I don't think we're doing the same thing. I don't know if we would be like friends or whatever, and like not as warm as I could be. And now like 5 years later, they're like core people in my life, and we all see the same people, and the same people are at the theater, and the same people are teaching and whatnot. So I think always being a happy and positive community member is really great,
because
I'm known for being a bitch.
Yes,
like
you are. That is your rap.
Big bitch. No,
Caroline
I don't
Martin,
know.
Big bitch.
I know, but like I just, you know, I feel like, again, my
your
totally
like quietness with them came from a place of like, oh, they're cool or whatever, instead of just smiling and saying hi.
Yeah, I again, going back to just being weird and in my mind, instead of just jumping into making those friendships immediately, it took a couple years of just like awkward, weird Caroline talking to people. So yeah, that's something that I am surprised, just like how many of the same people are around from when, you know, under St. Mark's, just doing all those shows, you know. So that's important to me. The other thing maybe is find your tribe. Work with people who bring you joy and that you're happy with. You know, you don't have to go on stage with anyone that brings you down or that you feel unsafe or unhappy with. And on the indie scene, you'll always be able to find people that you just love. That you love. Something that Keisha Zahler says from time to time. She'll be like, find your bliss. I just love that. Every way that you can interpret that. Yeah, find your bliss on stage. Find the people that bring you joy. And just be happy, because we're making things up on stage. And the stakes should not be that high.
That's awesome. I love it. Thank you, Caroline.
Thank you so much, Alex.
So that was a long-form conversation. Tune in to the next episode when Caroline Martin will be your host.
Yay.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Meow, meow.
Meow, meow.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.